He felt as though it would fly apart. He could feel his bones creaking. The glow ahead was halfway to the iron-heavy clouds now, but he'd reached a crossroads and he could see it rising from a house halfway down the street. He turned to look for the sweeper and saw the man yards behind him, mouth open, a statue falling forward. Lobsang turned, concentrated, let time speed up. He reached Lut Sey and caught him before he hit the ground. There was blood coming from the old man's ears.
"I can't do it, lad," the sweeper mumbled. "Get on, get on!"
"I can do it. It's like running downhill.
Not for me, it ain't."
"I can't just leave you here like this.
Save us from heroes. Get that bloody clock."
Lobsang hesitated. The downstroke was already emerging from the clouds, a drifting, glowing spike. He ran. The lightning was falling towards a shop a few buildings away. He could see a big clock hanging over its window. He pushed against the flow of time ever further, and it yielded. But the lightning had reached the iron pole atop the building. The window was closer than the door. He lowered his head and jumped through it, the glass shattering around him and then freezing in midair, clocks pinwheeling off the display and stopping as if caught in invisible amber. There was another door ahead of him. He grabbed the knob and pulled, feeling the terrible resistance of a slab of wood urged to move an appreciable fraction of the speed of light. It was barely open a few inches when he saw, beyond, the slow ooze of lightning run down the rod and into the heart of the big clock. The clock struck one. Time stopped. Mr. Soak, the dairyman, was washing bottles at the sink when the air dimmed and the water solidified. He stared at it for a moment, and then, with the manner of a man trying an experiment, held the bottle over the stone floor and let it go. It remained hanging in the air.
"Damn it," he said. "Another idiot with a clock, eh?"
What he did then was not usual dairy practice. He walked into the centre of the room and made a few passes in the air with his hands. The air brightened, the water splashed, the bottle smashed, although, when Ronnie turned around and waved a hand at it, the glass slivers ran together again. Then Ronnie Soak sighed and went to the cream-settling room. Large, wide bowls stretched away into the distance, and if Ronnie had ever allowed another to notice this, the distance contained far more distance than is ever found in a normal building.
"Show me," he said.
The surface of the nearest bowl of milk became a mirror, and then began to show pictures. Ronnie went back into the dairy, took his peaked cap off its hook by the door, and crossed the courtyard to the stable. The sky overhead was a sullen, unmoving grey as he emerged, leading his horse. The horse was black, glistening with condition, and there was this about it that was odd. It shone as though it was illuminated by a red light. Redness spangled off its shoulders and flanks, even under the greyness. And even when it was harnessed to the cart, it didn't look like any kind of horse that should be hitched to any kind of wagon. But people never noticed this, and again, Ronnie took care to make sure that they didn't. The cart gleamed with white paint, picked out here and there with a fresh green. The wording on the side declared proudly, "Ronald Soak, Hygienic Dairyman, Established." Perhaps it was odd that people never said, "Established when, exactly?" If they ever had, the answer would have had to be quite complicated. Ronnie opened the gates to the yard, and milk crates rattling set out into the timeless moment. It was terrible, he thought, the way things conspired against the small businessman. Lobsang Lud awoke to a little clicking, spinning sound. He was in darkness, but it yielded reluctantly to his hand. It felt like velvet, and it was. He'd rolled under one of the display cabinets. There was a vibration in the small of his back. He reached around gingerly and realised that the portable procrastinator was revolving in its cage. So, how did it go now? He was living on borrowed time. He'd got maybe an hour, perhaps a lot less, but he could slice it, so no. Something told him that trying that would be a really terminal idea, with time stored in a device made by Q. The mere thought made him feel that his skin was inches from a universe full of razor blades. So, 1 hour, perhaps a lot less. But you could rewind a spinner, right? No, the handle was at the back. You could rewind someone else's spinner. Thank you, Q, and your experimental models. Could you take it off, then? No. The harness was part...